Natural Resources of the House Special Budget Committee. This is Wednesday, May 11th, 2005, and we're here for an informational meeting on the education program area. And Mr. Bender, could you take us through the issues that we're going to be thinking about today?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I've distributed a couple items to you relating to the education program area budgets. I would just like to clarify for the members of the committee who were not on the Joint Ways and Means Committee Education Sub that I am assigned the post-secondary education budgets, and Sue McGlashan is assigned the K-12 budgets, including the state school fund, and also including the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, which is a licensing board for K-12 education. So that is how we split the assignments. I'm going to be covering both my agencies and K-12 as well as I can, but I just wanted to give you this overview of the education program and the types of budget issues that you'll be dealing with in this committee, as well as some progress as to what's been happening so far in the analysis of these budgets. And what I've handed out to you are two documents. One is a document that has some description on it. It's a memo labeled Overview of Education Program Area Budget and Policy Issues. And the other is a set of charts that looks like this. And with your indulgence, Madam Chair members, I'd like to go through these charts and then go to the memo and just talk about a bit about what is in the education program area, what the budgets are, and what some of the situations are that you're facing here. This front chart here looks at the governor's recommended budget. This was the budget that he submitted to you last December, and looks at the total amount of discretionary dollars that are available in that budget and how they are distributed among the various programs. The governor had $11.9 billion of discretionary funds in his budget and allocated 55% of those to education in the areas that you will be looking at in the education portion of your budgets this session. By discretionary funds, what I'm referring to here is primarily general fund, but also some certain other items that are used and other funds that are combined with general fund and used in a fungible manner with general fund to support the costs of the education programs in the state. Some of these other funds include lottery funds, as well as additional funds in such as Medicaid, upper payment fund money, tobacco settlement, master settlement monies, other monies that have been used and spent in accordance with the general fund and lottery funds in order to support the education and agencies. These are funds that are not dedicated for any specific purpose. So this number is larger than just the general fund and lottery fund total in the governor's recommended budget. But you can see here that the agencies, the budget areas that you will be looking at include all of the blue here in the pie chart. These are the education programs. The big ones are State School Fund, ODE, which stands for the Oregon Department of Education, other programs, that's primarily the functions of the state agency. And then in the dark blue, there's the post-secondary education. And probably because I'm the one who put this chart together, I sort of blow that up because that's the area that I look at. But you can see the post-secondary education consists of community colleges, the Oregon University System, which we usually refer to by its department name, the Department of Higher Education, the Oregon Health and Science University, and the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Together, those four budgets in the governor's budget use up 11% of the total discretionary fund expenditures. And of course, also in your purview in this subcommittee is the natural resources. And you can see that that's one of the yellow pie slices at 2%. So together you've got 57% of the budget in this subcommittee.
So we'll be known as the big spenders.
Big spenders. Mm-hmm. Big spenders. Okay.
The next diagram or chart in this handout, again, is looking at the governor's recommended budget as it was submitted to you in December. In some of these later charts, I'll be talking about some of the House and Senate budgets that have been put together up till this point. But this is a very illustrative chart, because what this shows is it simply shows the dollar totals of these discretionary funds for these various program areas compared to what the totals were during the current biennium, which will be ending at the end of June. So this shows the change in funding in percentage terms over the current biennium level. And these are the major program areas. Again, education, which will be taking up a lot of your time. You can see that this was flat funded. There was really, even when you go to a tenth of a percent in terms of that amount of specificity, you don't even get 0.1%. The education funding in absolute dollar amounts was equal, or is the governor proposed an equal amount to what we've got this time around. In the natural resources area, which you're looking at, that of course is a much smaller portion of the budget. It, however, is up 14% in the governor's budget over the current biennium level. The arrow there, shown at 5.3%, is the overall for the entire state budget. So the governor is spending, or proposed to spend, 5.3% more in these discretionary funds than he did than was spent in the current biennium.
So, Mr. Bender, just so I'm clear here, the fact that education got $200 million of approximately $400 million in increased revenue in the governor's budget and doesn't show up here is because of the size of that budget to begin with, that the percentage increase as a proportion of the total size of the budget is very small, whereas in natural resources, the increases are primarily because of the governor's choice to limit the backfill of the Measure 66 and PCSRF funds. But because that's a much smaller proportion of the budget, the small increases in that budget show up as a larger percentage.
Actually, according to the numbers that we've put together, the governor's budget does not include $200 million more for all of education than was spent in this biennium. It actually includes about $100,000 more. And perhaps the difference or the number you're looking at does not include anything beyond the general fund. But when you look at the general fund plus the lottery funds plus all the other funds that are being used in the budget as substitutes or supplements, I should say, the general fund, there's no growth.
So when you are considering discretionary funds here at the top of this graph, what are in discretionary funds? What are the components?
The components are general fund.
Okay.
The components are lottery funds, and then a number of specified other fund sources. And unfortunately, I didn't bring the complete list, but I can indicate what some of these fund sources have been and are. One of the fund sources would involve tobacco master settlement funds. So these are the funds that the state's receiving under the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement and which are not under law restricted to any particular purpose and are being used along with general funds to support some of these budgets. Other items that are being used would be uses of fund balances in particular biennia. So for example, as you know, as the legislature was faced with declining revenues, you felt a need in order to protect education funding to spend some of the money that was in the Education Stability Fund. Well, that isn't general fund, but that is funds that are being spent. And we include that in discretionary funds, even though it would not be shown if we just looked at a general fund total.
Do you include in there the disbursement from the Common School Trust Fund?
I don't believe, I'm not sure that I do. I think I didn't, actually. and I can double check. I apologize. This particular chart I did several months ago, and I haven't really gone back again and looked at all of the. I've got the base data here, but I don't have the list of funds that I did include. Some of the other things that are though included are the impact of fund shifts, timing shifts. During the special sessions, when there was a shortfall in revenue, you actually moved the last payments of the biennium to the current biennium for both the state school fund and the community college support funds. But you then allowed or changed the law to allow the districts to accrue that payment, which actually occurred, I believe it was within a month of after the biennium ended, as revenues in the biennium. So this was the actually the 2001-03 biennium, which was affected in this manner. These are other discretionary funds that are counted in these numbers here.
Representative Schalker has a question.
Maura, from what I've learned from Natural Resources, Madam Chair, the Common School Fund is legally, statutorily dedicated to education, isn't it? Those aren't discretionary funds we can spend wherever we want, are they?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I actually don't know that much about the Common School Fund. I believe you're correct.
Mr. Bender does the higher education piece. The Common School Trust Fund figures into the K-12 budget. So perhaps we could just get a little research done on that and talk about that later.
In LFO, unfortunately, we're like the specialists. You know, one knows can deal with the right toe and a different person deals with the left toe.
Madam Chair, you mean Mr. Bender doesn't know everything like we do?
I'm not
he knows
out
more and more
territory.
About less and less. He knows less and less about more and more.
That's why he's here today, to learn.
Okay. Let's continue on with your graphs, if you would, please, Mr. Bender. Sure.
I did want to comment. One thing that may be sticking out in the graph before we turn is the all other number. Mm-hmm. That very large rate of growth in all other is a bit deceptive. One of the principal items in the all other category is the appropriation that the legislature makes to the emergency board. And the governor's budget included $150 million to the emergency board that was not included in the 2003-05 biennium. And what that $150 million is for compensation cost increases for both state employees at $130 million and home health care workers at $20 million. And because that is in there in the governor's budget this time, and there were no funds for those types of costs last time, there's a very big increase in the all other. But it's not as if there was, you know, in general, there's really more funds being.
So to follow up on that, in some of the budgets I've seen floating around, various House, Senate, et cetera, co-chairs budgets, the e-board number's been significantly reduced. Does that reduce the money available for those compensation packages, or are those taken care of in other ways?
To the extent that the emergency board, the allocation or appropriation to the emergency board for compensation cost increases is reduced, there is less funding available to finance the compensation costs that are negotiated through the collective bargaining process. What happens is the compensation, typically, the budget anticipates certain employee cost increases and incorporates those cost increases into the particular state agency budgets. And those cost increases are typically the items that are not negotiated in the collective bargaining agreement. The biggest example would be the cost for PERS contributions on behalf of employees. That rate is built into the budget, but the elements of the compensation package that are being bargained, which would include the salary levels, you know, any if there will be any rate of salary increase, what types of benefit packages, primarily like health benefit packages, what they will be, will the employees have to contribute a certain amount, those types of things which are subject to bargaining. Instead, what is typically done, and the governor did this time, is a certain amount in anticipation or to help meet some of those costs is appropriated to the emergency board. And then after the contracts are signed, those funds are then distributed back to the state agency budgets where the monies are actually spent.
Thank you.
In the second chart, which looks similar to the first one, in the same colors and the same items, what I've changed here is I've changed, instead of looking at percentage terms, looking at the actual dollar changes to show them in this manner. It sort of changes the magnitude of some of these, of the order of some of these. You can see, for example, that public safety has a much larger increase in terms of dollars than might be clear just looking at the percentage charts. But this is just another way of looking at this information.
You know, Mr. Bender, would it be a lot of work for you to take the House co-chair's budget and put it in this format?
It would not be too much work, and I've done that, as you'll see, for the education format. I just haven't done it for
both. Okay.
And that takes us to the next chart, actually.
Okay.
If there aren't any questions, I'll go to the next one.
Oh, this is just what I was after.
This rather ugly-looking chart, actually, and hard to read, is trying to put a lot of information on the same page. And what this is trying to do is it's trying to show the differences between the governor's recommended budget, the House budget, and the Senate budget. And the one thing that's different is we're looking at different things here than we looked at, or different entities than we looked at the earlier charts. Instead of looking at these broad program areas, one of them being education, we're now looking at the six principal education budgets, or the six education budgets, I shouldn't say principal, the six of them that receive these discretionary funds. And those are, for those of you who are new to education, just to clarify what these acronyms are, ODE is the Oregon Department of Education, exclusive of state school fund monies that are transferred to the K-12 districts and ESDs. So that's the Oregon Department of Education, then the state school fund, which again is the monies that are transferred to school districts and ESDs. CCWD is the acronym for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Most of their funds are transferred to the community college districts, though some of the funds are retained here with the state agency. DHED is the Department of Higher Education, which operates the Oregon University System. OHSU is the Oregon Health Sciences University, and OSAC is the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. All of these together are combined in the earlier charts, two charts, under the education bar. So this is looking more finely at these
all
different
the blue stuff.
Correct. All of the blue stuff. This shows, in dollar terms, the change from the prior biennium for these different education entities. So if we look at blue, just to start off with, if you look at the blue for each one, you'll see that the governor's budget had $3.4 million less than the current biennium for the Department of Education, had $86.2 million more for the state school fund than during the current biennium. And you can see there was a cut. He had a cut of about $22.8 million for community colleges, an increase of about $18 million for higher ed, a reduction of $128 million for OHSU, and an increase of $50 million for OSAC. This is over the current level, the current level of funding. And then the red shows the House budget that your chair has released. And the yellow shows the Senate budget. So you can see, looking at these individual entities here, comparisons between how your funding compares to what the Senate has proposed and to what the governor has proposed.
Why is OHSU so far in the negative?
OHSU is so far in the negative for two reasons. One reason is that in the discretionary funds, one of the elements that are included in these discretionary funds are bonds, that the bond proceeds that the state transferred to OHSU to support its Oregon Opportunity Program. The Oregon Opportunity Program is an effort to expand the bioscience research and programs of the Oregon Health Science University, and also to some additional investments in rural health initiatives. What the state did was the state provided a total of $200 million in proceeds to OHSU, split roughly $100 million this biennium and $100 million last biennium. So out of the $127.8 million reduction, $100 million is roughly a decline due to the fact that these funds were never anticipated to be continued this biennium. That was the full amount, $200 million over two biennia. But withdrawing that resulted in a reduction to OHSU. There is also another reduction in the general fund support to OHSU on top of that. And the reduction in general fund support amounts to about a $32 million reduction in general fund support for the ongoing operations of OHSU. So if you add the $100 million reduction for the end of the opportunity the Oregon Opportunity Funding, plus the 30-some million dollars for the end of the or for the reduction that the governor had in support for OHSU programs, and you offset that by the fact that we're now giving them more money for debt service on these bonds, on net, you have a $127.8 million reduction.
Madam Chair?
Representative Shaw.
You. You know, we've all seen these graphs that show the amount of revenue we get from workers as it goes up according to their education level. I was wondering if Mr. Bender had anything like that. I was wondering if he had anything specifically showing OHSU and the people they graduate out of there.
They have in their annual report that information, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I'd be interested in seeing that.
Yes. I'm not aware of having seen something that reports on the average earnings of OHSU graduates, if that's what you're asking for.
That's
but
right.
I can check with the agency.
Well,
to see
and perhaps we can have OHSU connect with you directly, being Mr. Bender's time is rather at a premium right now.
All right. Thank you very much.
One thing that I would like to do that I didn't do on the earlier two charts, but I have some information for you. If you go back to the first of the bar charts, all of this is the governor's budget. What I have is I have the House and Senate percentage changes for education, but I don't have them for the rest of the program areas. So you see, under the governor's recommended budget, in percentage terms, there was no increase for education. If you want to add or write in, I'm sorry I didn't have time to do this, under the House budget, education funding in total would go up 4.1% instead of zero. And in the Senate budget, primarily because of the larger funding in that budget for K-12, it would go up 6.4%. Again, I do not have the comparable numbers for the other areas, but that is that's sort of the total for all of the education. If you flip to the next chart, the dollar equivalents, as opposed to those percentage equivalents, would be as follows. You see, under the governor's budget, it's up $100,000.
Wait a second.
Under the House budget, the total increase is $271.7 million. So the House has added an additional $272 million to what the governor had in education. The Senate has added $418.8 million in education. The last page here again compares the three budgets, but again, instead of dollar differences, looks at the percentage change. So you can see the percentage changes and how they compare for the governor and how they compare for the House and Senate. I don't know how much detail you'd like me to go into for the individual differences between the House and Senate budgets for any of these areas. I would be happy to do that. I do want to mention a couple things about the differences. I'm still at this last chart here. If you look at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, you can see this is a particular agency where the House and Senate budgets are quite different from the governor's recommended budget, but the House and Senate budgets are absolutely identical. This is the only case here where the House and Senate budgets are identical to each other.
Hallelujah, Madam Chair.
Oh, I was thinking it was just coincidental. Statistically insignificant.
We had in the sub this morning, I think, some agreement that we could change this.
Really?
Yeah, we could bring that out of where we didn't agree. I mean, if it causes anybody heartburn, we agree. we can do something to
just so that there's some consistency in all
right.
of this.
Yes, yes. We were thinking of moving the red bar up.
Okay. And the yellow bar was not going to move as usual.
Well, we're the we have no power over the Senate, you know.
I think we better move on.
In the other budgets, there are more substantial differences between the House and Senate versions. For example, for OHSU, it's not very easy to see this in the diagrams that I've put together here. But for
it's not very easy to see it in those four-point type numbers either.
But for OHSU, the governor had a total of $85 million. I think that's on one of the charts here, perhaps. But maybe not even. I guess I just even can't even see that number here. But the difference between the two budgets at this point is the House increased that amount to $110 million, and the Senate increased the amount to $93.7 million. So the House budget has about $16 million more for OHSU than the Senate budget does.
Okay.
For the Department of Higher Education, the governor had about $697 million. The House has increased that to $721 million. And the Senate has increased that to $713. So the House has more, I get $8 million more for DHED, which is, of course, a much smaller difference in terms of, especially since it's a larger budget in percentage terms. In community colleges, the House has an additional $12.3 million over what the Senate has.
So what's the House number?
The House number is 439, and the Senate number is 427.
And what's the governor's?
Is 394.
Okay.
For the state school fund, the House number is first of all, the governor's number was $5 billion. The House number is $5.2 billion. And the Senate number, which you may have heard, is 5.325. Actually, to express it consistently with the House and to include the increase in common school fund monies that have been forecast since the governor submitted his budget, their total is actually 5.38 for a $180 million difference. In this case, the Senate has more than the House. And finally, for ODE, the governor's budget was $294 million, The House, you increased that to $299 million, and the Senate has increased that to $302 million.
What was the governor's again, please?
$294 million.
Thank you.
Okay. Questions or comments on these graphs? Let's proceed.
The next thing I would like to do is start through this memo that you have before you that indicates in a little more detail some of the items or some of the issues in the budgets. And this starts with the Department of Education. And just to note a few things, that the governor's recommended budget for the agency reduced the operations by about $2.7 million below the central budget level, and it's about a $15.5 million reduction from 9901. So you can see there's sort of a downward trend in funding in the governor's budget for the department operations. Another major element in the governor's budget was an $11 million reduction in from the central budget level for the Oregon pre-kindergarten program, which is anticipated to reduce the number of eligible students served from 60% to 53%. There are also reductions in some of the other grant and aid programs, such as Student Leadership Centers and Frontier Learning Network. Some of the special education programs will experience minor reductions, but this will allow federal maintenance of effort requirements to be met. So the reductions were not to an extent that they would sacrifice federal dollars that require maintenance of effort.
Is everyone familiar with the concept of maintenance of effort? Representative Schaffler, have you stumbled on that one already?
I've heard it, but if you want to go over it again, I can always use a refresher.
Mr. Bender, a 45-second refresher here.
Maintenance of effort are requirements in a number of different federal programs that essentially, in order for the state to achieve funding or the full amount of funding that it would be eligible for, the state cannot reduce its support. They're trying to prevent us from just substituting their money for ours. So they only give us money if we continue to do support at the level that we have. Under the state school fund, here's just an item about how the school districts are, how the school system is organized. There are now 198 school districts and 20 education service districts. None of these employees or districts are state government agencies. They are all local government agencies, so their employees are not state employees. State support for local education districts has been unstable, and an interesting fact is that in both the 2001 and 2003 sessions, the legislature approved funding of $5.2 billion. But then if you flip this over, neither of those were able to be maintained due to the economic recession, and funding was reduced to $4.7 billion in 2001-03 biennium and to $4.9 billion in the 2003-05 biennium that we are currently in. The School Revenue Forecast Committee, which reviewed the funding needs to fund at the essential budget level, came up with a number that totaled $5.318 billion. However, even though they have not revised this number yet, we do know that under the methodology they used, if they had known then what we know now, the number would have been less. And the things that we know now that they didn't know then is that the PERS rate increase will not be as high as they thought it would be, and that we would have certain additional local revenues that we didn't know we would have then. Part of those revenues are, I think, the $55 million in common school fund distributions that I referred to earlier.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Who sits on that committee? Are they appointed by the governor? What is that committee?
I do not believe they are appointed by the governor or confirmed by the Senate. They are primarily staff people who are in charge of looking at and forecasting revenues, as well as people, representatives from the school districts themselves. But I can try to find out what the legal membership of that committee is.
If you have time. Or maybe somebody out there will get it for me.
We could also ask Ms. McGlashan when she's in here going over budgets.
Thank you.
The Quality Education Commission also does an analysis of school costs or school funding needs, and they estimated that $7.1 billion would be needed to help 90% of students meet performance benchmarks. So clearly that number is far in excess of the amounts that are available and are being discussed in the current biennium, in funding for next biennium. The Senate did pass a bill that included $5.325 billion in funding. That's in general fund and lottery funds. And again, the $55 million of additional common school fund distributions would be on top of that. So the more apples-to-apples comparison with the numbers that were previously published in the Senate budget is that now the appropriation is 5.38. So 5.38, which is above the essential budget level of 5.318, even before the 5.318 is adjusted downward to reflect some new information that we have. The next bullet item is that the federal No Child Left Behind Act puts additional requirements on schools, and the actual cost of these requirements and whether federal funding is sufficient to cover the costs has not been determined. So this is a big unknown facing, or uncertainty facing, the K-12 school system. And people have been looking at education service districts this session to see what the focus of their role should be and whether there would be any fiscal impact of changing that. The next item is Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. I just have some bullet items here describing what's happening with community colleges. The community colleges have been reducing their programs due to budget constraints, and their actual enrollment levels have been in decline for the past several years. So they're actually shrinking. Tuition rates at community college have increased by an average of 55% in the last 4 years. That's a high rate of increase in any event, and it's also even higher than the comparable increase for higher ed, which I believe is about a 45% average increase over the same period of time. Both of those are quite steep increases, but for community colleges, the percentage increase has been higher. Because of a number of factors, this has led, if we compare the impact of tuition rate increases to community colleges with the impact of tuition rate increases on higher ed, we'll observe some differences, and there are a number of reasons for this. First of all, there's reason to believe that community college students are more price sensitive than higher education, than students at OUS. So that as these costs increase, even if they increase by the same percentage in both systems, we would expect to observe a bigger impact on the enrollments at the community college system than we would at the higher ed system. And we've seen that. We've seen these enrollments in decline. Another factor is that tuition finances, let me put this another way, I'm sorry. General fund supports a greater portion of the community college budgets than it does support the higher education budgets. So as, let me say this a different way. I just want to focus on the right thing. Tuition supports a much greater portion of the higher education budget, or the budgets of the OUS schools, than tuition supports of the community colleges. For higher education, the funding sources are primarily state general fund, tuition, and then some other funds that are combined with those two sources to finance the costs. And the tuition component is much greater than the state general fund component. For community colleges, the sources of funds are, again, general fund, tuition, and then the local property taxes. The tuition is less than half of the support for the community colleges, even though it's more than half of the funding for the for OUS. And what this means is that when higher ed increases tuitions by 45%, they're increasing the revenue that is financing a larger portion of their total budget than is the case for community colleges. And they're in a better position than if community colleges increased their funding by the same percentage, because it's a smaller component of their total funds to begin with. So as community colleges have been increasing their tuition rates, this has been less supportive proportionally to their budgets than has been the case for higher ed. And you have not seen the types of contraction in higher ed that you have seen in community colleges, at least not yet. We've seen that these enrollments have continued to increase, and the number of students served at OUS has continued to go up. And this is a difference here for community colleges. The governor's recommended budget for community colleges decreased funding by an additional 5.5% below the 2003-05 level. And that number is actually shown here on your last chart. And both the House and the Senate budgets act to reverse that and to restore funding. In your budget, the House budget, you actually turned a 5.5% decline into a 5.5% increase. The Senate did not increase the support by quite as much, but their budget also has a 2.5% increase as opposed to a 5.5% reduction. The final item that I wanted to mention about in the community college budget is that the governor's recommended budget includes $91.2 million of state Article 11G bonds for community college capital construction projects. These are bonds that the interest of which will be paid by the state general fund. And if you approve this, the interest would amount to approximately $14 million per biennium for the next 15 biennia. That's the cost. The $91.2 million in bond proceeds would not have to come out of the general fund at all this biennium, but the impact will be in future biennium.
Will you go over that again one more time for me?
What the governor proposes is that the state issue $91.2 million in bonds to support half the costs of six community college capital construction projects. Because these are bonds, this would generate additional money beyond what is coming in to the general fund. So this is an extra $91.2 million that would be coming in from the bond proceeds. So the financing does not have to come from the general fund. However, in the future, the debt service on these bonds would be paid by general fund, and that would amount to about $14 million starting next biennium.
For how many?
For 30 years or 15 biennia.
Right, okay, thank you.
This reverses or ends a 30-year policy of requiring the colleges to fund their capital construction projects out of their local resources, including, of course, community colleges do have authority to issue bonds, to go to the voters to get authority to issue bonds for capital construction projects.
And, Madam Chair, I vote for everyone that comes to my house.
You do what?
I vote for every one of those that come to my house. Just for the record.
I did not have time to type out comments about higher ed, so if I can just talk about this verbally a bit, the issues.
Well, before we leave this, Madam Chair, the components of tuition general fund and other sources for community colleges versus Oregon University System, can you? I'm trying not to make work for Mr. Vanderbilt. Can you get something that...
Absolutely.
I would bring your attention, Representative Schaffler, to the LFO analysis of the governor's budget.
Okay.
And if you don't have one of those, I'd be glad to get you one. But if you look the departments up inside of that document, it will give you a history of the funding levels.
Okay.
It will also give you a discussion of the relationship of the income and the outgo.
Very good. Thank you very much.
In higher education, the governor had a number of both cuts and increases into the higher education budget. As you can see, the total amount was 2.6% above the amount that was provided in the current biennium. Higher education, when we budget for higher education, though, in order to determine the amount of funds available for higher education operations, you need to look, or we need to look at the other funds that are combined with the discretionary funds and that finance that budget. They are totally intermingled, and we look at them in a combined manner when we look at the funding that's available to the Department of Higher Education. The governor included general fund for a new capital construction project of $5.4 million to help finance a portion of a joint facility in Medford for Southern Oregon University and Rogue Community College. Typically, there has not been support, direct general fund support for higher education capital construction projects. There have been some exceptions, but that has not been the norm. And actually, both of the House and Senate eliminate that general fund component. The Article 11G bonds, which are used both for higher ed and for community colleges and are being proposed to be used for community colleges, require a dollar-for-dollar match. So if you want to issue $5 million in bonds, you need $5 million of match. Or put another way, if you have a $20 million project, the most that you can finance of that project out of Article 11G bonds is $10 million, because there has to be a match of $10 million from some other source.
Representative,
does the Treasurer's Office have a cheat sheet on how these bonds work, I imagine?
Well, there's really only two kinds of bonds that the higher ed system uses. And one of them, the general revenue bonds, are the bonds that we're having a discussion on right now. And those require that the campuses come up with half the money. The state will come up with half the money in the form of bonds. And then to pay the bonds back, the general fund is indebted over the life of the bonds to pay that money back. So that's one kind of bonds, the G bonds.
Thank you.
The second set of bonds are known as Article 11 F1 bonds. Mm-hmm. And these bonds, the state does not pay the debt service with general fund. Instead, these bonds are limited to support projects that have an identified source, that generate an identified source of repayment. And they are typically, though not exclusively, used for auxiliary activities in higher ed, such as housing, dining, student centers. For example, if a university wants to build a new or renovate a residence hall, the debt service is not paid from the general fund, but is rather paid from the housing fees and residence fees.
So the second kind of bonds, the F bonds, have no impact to the general fund at all. The total cost of the project is paid for by the campus.
Thank you very much.
Do the F bonds have a match to?
They do not. There's no match required. A project can be entirely funded by F bonds. There are also, in addition, the state has recently, very recently, added lottery bonds to finance or to help finance higher education projects. And indeed, sometimes the lottery bond proceeds have been used as a match to G bonds, which means that effectively you have a building that's 100% debt finance. There's no equity put in there, down payment, or whatever you want to call it. So that was an addition to the budget that was restored. There were also some smaller packages in the higher ed budget that the governor proposed, including $2 million roughly for an integrated K-16 data system. There was also money in community colleges budget for that. But then there were a number of reductions that the governor proposed to the higher education budget. In the education area, what we call the education in general program, which is also partially tuition funded, and also in the OSU statewide public services, the agricultural experiment station, forest research lab, and the extension service, which do not receive tuition revenues, or receive very minimal tuition revenues, but aren't regular, you know, four-credit course tuition revenues. What the governor's budget proposed was to have reductions in education and general programs, but then the governor supported a tuition increase in higher ed that was to be, or is to be, I guess, 7% for resident undergraduates on average. It would vary by campus and by student, but on average, a 7% increase the first year of the biennium, and a 5% increase the second year of the biennium. Right now, tuition and fees average roughly $5,000 at OUS for a resident undergraduate. So, you know, roughly it would be a $350 increase the first year, and then another 5% on top of that the second year. Overall, if you include both the resident undergraduates and all the other types of students, such as non-resident students, such as graduate students, the rates of increase overall are somewhat less. It's 5% the first year and 4% the second year, because the tuition rate increases would be lower for these other student categories in general than they would be for the resident undergraduates.
Madam Chair, is there anywhere I can go and find how we compare these increases at our schools compare relative to other state schools?
Yes. We do have that information. Typically, in very broad terms, typically the tuition levels are lower in the West than they are in the rest of the country. And if you compare the OUS tuitions nationwide, they're not that high on a national basis, but when you look more closely at the neighboring states, our tuition rates are higher, are less competitive than many of the neighboring states. But we do have information on that. By supporting this tuition rate increase, the governor's budget would provide sufficient funds to offset the general fund reductions, or the reductions that would be necessary due to the general fund cuts that he has in his budget, and also to permit what's estimated to be perhaps a 2% increase in compensation rates each of the 2 years for the employees of higher ed, and finance some of the expected costs and benefit increases. So they would be in a situation with this general fund where they should be able to handle that as long as you gave them sufficient expenditure limitation to spend these to spend the tuition rate increases, the revenues generated from these tuition rate increases. As you may know, both the House and Senate budgets contain $33.5 million in order to provide funds, the funds that the institutions are expected to generate from the 7%, 5% increase on resident tuition rates, with the expectation or direction to OUS that if you receive these funds, you will hold these rates constant. There would be a tuition and fee freeze for resident undergraduates, and the Oregon University system would not lose out. They would still have the same amount of funding as they would if they had had these increases, because instead of the $33.5 million in new tuition revenues, both the House and Senate give them $33.5 million in general fund instead. OHSU's budget, there was a decline of about $32 million in the governor's budget from the level of support that was provided during the current biennium. The governor's budget did not specify how the university was to implement or this particular the amount of funding, the change in the funding level from the funding that they have during the current biennium. So OHSU is a public corporation. They're not a state agency. And their budget is under the control of their board of directors. When the board of directors received the governor's proposal, they came up with a proposal to rebalance their budget based on the amount of general fund that is coming to the state under the governor's recommended budget. And they proposed a number of funding reductions in various areas, including elimination of all general fund support for their hospital. They had been receiving about $12.5 million per biennium from the state to support the costs of their hospital operations. The rest of the funds that they were receiving from the state, basically the $83 million, was being used to support the education programs, such as the schools of medicine, dentistry, and nursing, and the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center, which does offer clinical services, and the Rural Health Initiatives and the AHEC program, the Area Health Education Centers program. OHSU did not eliminate funding for any of these other programs other than the hospital, but they reduced the state support that would go into these other budgets as they rebalanced their budget in light of the governor's proposed funding levels. And there were a number of impacts that they have indicated that they expect to have to implement as a result of how they would implement the governor's recommended budget. And these included for the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center, the closing of a number of their clinics. They have a wide number of clinics that they offer, and they would close some of these clinics down. For the hospital, where they no longer would be receiving the $12.5 million, they have not indicated very specifically what the impact would be, except to note that because this would put their hospital budget in additional strain, they would seek to look at efforts to change their payer mix to acquire a greater percentage of their patients being people who have health insurance and who can pay, as opposed to people who are coming in without insurance or being covered by Medicaid programs. For the education programs, they were anticipating primarily increases in tuition to offset a lot of the reductions. So there were some reductions in programs at the schools of medicine, dentistry, and nursing.
What about does it then? Do you have more?
No. OSAC, I think we...
Oh, OSAC. Yeah.
Well, OSAC, the governor more than doubled the support for the Opportunity Grant. and the the House and Senate budgets still have a very large increase of about 50%, though they significantly reduced the amount of this increase. What the governor proposed to do at his funding level was to implement a number of expansions in that program, both in the categories of students that would be eligible to receive opportunity grants and in the dollar amounts of the opportunity grant awards that they would receive. The increases in students who would be eligible include, first of all, expanding awards to serve 100% of all the full-time students that are eligible under the criteria established by the Commission for eligibility of the Opportunity Grant. Currently, under the criteria that the Commission has established, the state, they can only award opportunity grants to approximately 70% of the students that meet the criteria, and the other 30% do not receive the awards. The way that they determine which 70% get the awards and which 30% don't is on a first-come, first-served basis. So the people who apply late are told that, unfortunately, the money's run out. So the governor included about $22 million, actually, to allow those extra 30% to be financed. There were a number of other elements that the governor included. He also established for the first time eligibility for the opportunity grant for part-time students. So students who were enrolled at least half the time would be eligible for an opportunity grant equal to half the full-time award amount. And then there were a number of award amount increases in the governor's budget. The governor's budget increased the amount of the award that each student would get and also established a new program so that certain students would get even a bigger opportunity grant amount than typical if they were first-time students who had obtained some type of educational credential, such as a certificate of additional mastery. They would be eligible for the first year of their opportunity grant to get a larger amount than other students would. The co-chairs basically still provide many of the major changes that the governor had proposed, though none of the award increases are included in the governor in the co-chairs' budgets. So the award amounts would just continue to be at 11% of the cost of attendance. They continue to grow as that cost increases, but the expansion beyond 11% is not funded in the co-chairs' budgets. And furthermore, the expansion to new individuals is delayed to the second year of the biennium. So it wouldn't be until the second year of the biennium that 100% of the full-time students would be served. It wouldn't be until the second year that the part-time awards would get established. And this resulted in a reduction in cost of $27 million.
Question?
Yeah, I just had an observation or a question, I guess. If we look at the difference between co-chairs' budgets and the governor's budgets on this issue of grant, Oregon Opportunity Grants, versus the tuition situation, it strikes me that we're putting about the same number of dollars in, whether it's the governor's budget or the co-chair's budgets. In one case, we're putting more in the governor's budget, we're putting that much more into the opportunity grants, and nothing into a tuition enhancement, for lack of a better word. And in the case of the co-chair's budgets, they're not putting as much into the opportunity grants, but they are freezing the tuition.
In the largest sense, you're very correct.
Yeah, okay. It's just a matter of which way we want to. We got about that number of dollars, give or take some petty cash. It's however we want to balance that.
You must have a pretty good petty cash account.
Easy come, easy go.
Just a few million.
So, But that looks to me like the issue we're dealing with in that.
I think in a very high level, that is exactly the issue.
Yeah.
Okay, are you finished, Mr. Bendon?
Unless there are any more questions, I have any.
Any questions or comments?
Madam Chair, not only is the subject matter new to me, I've never been on a House Budget Committee, and I've never seen it happen before. Now, the Senate rolled theirs out really fast. Are we going to go into these in more detail?
Much more detail.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Thank you very much. And just for the record, Sue brought down this School Revenue Forecast Committee, and it's from Governor Kitzhaber's executive order. Then the committee consists of representatives from the Department of Education, Legislative Fiscal, Legislative Revenue, K-12 stakeholders from school districts, labor unions, and the legislature. And it doesn't say here how they get on the committee, but just for the record, Sue is, the staff around here is ever diligent.
And with that, having no further business before this committee, we are adjourned.